Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this, Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Nashville by Todd Snyder from his album East Nashville Skyline. One of the great uniting forces between the rival cities, Todd Snyder. As Drew and I are on the highway headed to Nashville right now for Grizzlies training camp.
So what's going to happen today? Today you get him. When are you going to talk to the players after training camp? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, they have availabilities every day, and the availability I think is you know at 1:30 in the afternoon or whatever, and it's you know it's. It is what it is. You stand and wait, and then they let you in, and then you stand around in a scrum and listen to the coach, and then you stand in a scrum and listen to or talk to usually two players, and you get in time so you can like look around and eyeball who's in the gym and watch guys you know go through shooting drills and stuff, but. Yeah. You don't like get to like sit there and watch practice or anything.
I'd urge people to read Drew's piece from the Daily Mail from yesterday and Chris's piece from yesterday about what happened yesterday. But we'll talk about some of it now. Let's go through some of the folks who did talk. What struck you about Ja Morant?
I thought Ja was among the, most notable people and among the least notable speakers.
Uh-huh.
Really,
I agree.
And so he didn't really say a whole lot. The line about China, I think Drew asked him about China, and he had the line about, you know, I learned that, like, you know, I'm making this up. I can't remember exactly what he says, but, like, I cause waves even when I'm standing still or something
This is from your column and from the press conference. I don't only have motion. What did you learn about your everything in China? I don't only have motion where my feet are.
Yeah. That's a pretty good line. And so, but you know, I think we talked about this yesterday before. Yep. Like we weren't expecting anything newsy from John Morant, and we didn't really get anything newsy from John Morant. Hopefully he'll make waves by running up and down the floor or whatever when the season starts.
Right. The other kind of motion. Let's see where the motion, where his feet are. Exactly. That one thing that did strike me just generally is that it felt like for a long time, Ja felt the world was out to get him. Right. And now it feels like whether it's what happened in China or he's watching these WNBA players who are wearing his shoes, it feels like he's noticing that the world is actually lifting him up, you know, and that's gross.
I think that's true. I also think that he is sort of, in some cases for good reasons, like I think he feels he's no longer as interested in sort of playing with the media anymore. And so that's, you know, maybe that's partly the, in the West, which like people beat him up on, I think unfairly forever, and some of the other stuff. But I think he is more reserved and less willing to like give you a good quote than he used to be. And I'm fine with that.
Now, Jaren, the opposite. He's like a talk show host. Walks in there.
I thought one of the more interesting things that was said, and I didn't reference this in what I wrote. And it's totally tangential to Grizzlies stuff, but just in terms of what was purely interesting. His long, detailed answer to Clay Bailey's question about the All-Star game changes, I thought was really insightful and really interesting. And, like, you know, someone somewhere, people who are writing about the All-Star game need to dig that up and find the Jaren stuff about that.
Yeah, what happens, folks, is that Clay is obviously, Clay writes for the AP in addition to the Daily Memphian. He was, obviously, at media media availabilities across the land, someone was told, please ask about the All-Star game. And so Clay was dispatched to ask this question. But Jaren's answer was essentially, it's not just that we like want to relax. It's that when we play basketball, we have a routine. We go through things. We get massage when we get massage. We work out when we work out. And all these things get us ready to play. And those things are totally different and jarringly different at a game. And you don't want to ruin yourself when you're not going through your normal routines. I mean, well, that was the essence of it. And I thought
you made the point that if one of us gets injured in this game, who are you going to blame, right?
Right.
And to me, he made I'm sort of paraphrasing slash putting words in his mouth. I think that's essentially what he was saying, is that it's an unfair expectation to expect the All-Star game to have the flavor and intensity of like regular season or playoff basketball. And it's sort of I appreciate that because it sort of rhymes with my own sense that I've expressed before, that this is not a crisis. Like, it's fine that the All-Star game's bad. Like, let's move on.
Now, Jaren did not really answer. You had two questions that I thought were asked that I was really interested in the answers to, and I didn't. Neither one really. They both kind of ducked it. One was when you asked Jaren, what's your role going to be? That Tomas Isolo didn't have someone like you when he was in Europe. So what might that look like? And the other was when you asked Zach Kleiman, you've refocused the team on this other approach. What hallmarks will there be, milestones and achievements along the way, that will confirm to you that it's on track, and neither one of them answered those questions, Chris. I was disappointed.
Maybe I should rethink the kind of questions I ask, because I think those are absolutely key questions for the Grizzlies this season.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if I honestly expected to get like good answers in those settings necessarily. I think the Jaren thing is interesting because I do think, and I haven't committed close study to Tomas Isolo's European teams, but my sense is that like speedy guards and bigs who can screen are maybe they're not as good as John Morant and Zach Edey over there, but like guys who have those skill sets are pretty common. I don't think guys who have the Jaren Jackson Jr. skill set are very common, because when they exist, they end up in the NBA when they're 20 years old. Like, there aren't like 27-year-olds who play like that over there. And so I don't think Isolo has had a player like that to try to figure out how to maximize. And I think that's one of the interesting questions, is what he'll do with Jaren and how he'll maximize him. The other question, and this is, especially with Edey out to start the season, the John Morant, Jaren Jackson two-man game is something that the Grizzlies sort of was a thing early on in their pairing that the team really got away from. And Jaren is not a good screener, but his absence of Edey and the fact that Isolo wants to do a lot of that, are we going to see Jaren used in that way? Or is he going to be more completely like, the off-ball, more spacer guy? And if that's the case, are you going to get him enough touches to get him going downhill and attacking the defense and not have him be like standing in the corner guy? Like, these are things we've been through before, but now we're going to go through them all over again with a new coach.
Yeah, I suspect Jaren could have actually given you something there. The other question about what are the markers of whether this is being successful, you probably weren't, upon reflection, going to get an answer for that one. But it is.
Well, no, because I think it may be like we know it when we see it kind of thing.
Right.
I don't know if there is a good answer for that right now. But I think it's something that the team itself is almost certainly, whether they voiced it or not, they're going to monitor and evaluate over the course of this season and on through to next summer. Like, I just think it is like at the very core of where things are headed with the franchise.
Anything particularly strike you about Isolo's comments? He did say over and over again, very well organized. In addition to the fast pace and the effort, that was a theme he came back to, very well organized.
Isolo is someone who is going to talk every day during training camp, so we'll get more from him. And in settings where maybe we can, there'll be more follow-up, so we can sort of dig in a little bit more. He was less sort of verbose in his answers, really, and less detailed in his answers yesterday than he was last season, almost every time he talked, which I found sort of interesting. There was less jargon, right? We got so used to the jargon with Taylor Jenkins. Like, every year there's new jargon. Last year was the three Ps.
Yeah.
We're doing the three Ps, the pace, the principles, and the possessions. Isolo was a lot less jargony. Like, wasn't as much, this is the new language we're learning. Even the jargon that is associated with him, like collective basketball, which is sort of an Isolo thing that Taylor Jenkins adopted, he didn't really say that. But, he talked about you talked about pace of play and intensity, and you know that's something that clearly that is what they want to do. It's something that a team like the Pacers, who was brought up yesterday, had a lot of success with. To me, there's sort of a question of, and this is maybe something to bring up with Isolo in the days ahead, but a question of, you know, that commitment to pace and intensity that worked in the European setting, can you have the same commitment to that over the course of an 82-game NBA schedule, which works so much differently than what he used to do in Europe? That's sort of a question.
Yeah, and he talked about how different it is. I agree completely, by the way. He was in last year, he was almost strikingly forthcoming. You know, and yesterday he didn't seem evasive, but maybe they put him through training camp or something.
He got a little extra media training this summer. Right. Like, it does seem like that might be the case.
All right, let's get to some of the really interesting ones. The new guys were the most interesting, because they were the new guys, but also they were, I think they're going to come in handy in the locker room, some of these guys. Like, what struck you about Ty Jerome?
Ty Jerome sounded like someone who could be like the lead assistant on the team.
Exactly.
He could be a player coach. Like when he was breaking down like the different kinds of shots and the hierarchy of the kind of shots you want to get and you know, talking about, you know, some shots are better for other players than some players and not other players in terms of the mid range, and like Ty Jerome just came across as someone who is not only good at basketball but has really thought out his approach to basketball. He just seemed someone who was like extremely mature and very thoughtful about the game.
Yeah. He did talk about how at Cleveland he was either playing with Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland basically all the time, unless one of them was out with an injury, which happened. But saying the ball handling comes in handy in that circumstance. I do wonder about both in Cleveland. I don't know how it worked in terms of defensively. How did it operate defensively, and how is it going to work? Whether it's, you know, you got a bunch of small guards here in Memphis, and I don't know how the Ty Jerome jaw pairing, and I've forgotten that they were in the same draft class and knew each other way back when, how that is going to evolve.
Yeah, it sort of brings up how positionality is a little bit fluid in basketball. Because he talked about how, you know, we always played with two guards in Cleveland. And some people might look at it and say, well, every team plays with two guards. You have the point guard and the scoring guard. But the reality is the Grizzlies alignment that people think they're going to go into with the season with a starting lineup is a guard and two wings. You know, it's because neither Jalen Wells or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope were ball handlers. You have your one guard and two wings, whereas his point was Cleveland like always played with two ball handling guards, that three guard rotation of him, Mitchell, and Garland. And even though the Grizzlies probably won't have a starting lineup that looks like that, they're going to have to play like that just to get their talent on the floor, because John Morant, Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen are all going to demand, I mean, obviously Ja, but they're all going to demand heavy minutes in a heavy role. And so even if you start with two of those guys on the bench, you're going to play a lot of the game with those combinations of those guards. And to your question about Cleveland, like Cleveland was awesome last year, second best team in the league, but like that did present defensive problems for them. They were so awesome on offense, they overwhelmed those problems in the regular season, but it was an issue. And it's something the Grizzlies will have to manage. But the point that Ty Jerome made about with the NBA going towards more ball pressure on defense, a reaction to counter that is to have multiple ball handlers on the floor. And I think that's one of the problems the Grizzlies had last season with their heavy turnover rate, is that Desmond Bane seemed a little overtaxed as a ball handler at times. Scottie Pippen had a lot of turnover problems early, and one of the hopes for him is that he will overcome that a little bit. He'll also be probably off-ball more offensively, even as a small guard, because of Ty Jerome and Ja Morant both there.
It was interesting because I mean, both Ty Jerome and Jock Landale talked about they're really drawn here by the opportunity, and particularly Landale. It's obvious he has an opportunity. He was well paid for what he was and frustrated in Houston. Is the opportunity that clear? To me, the opportunity for Landale, particularly in the injuries, is right there, different than he's probably ever had before. For Ty Jerome, this is going to take some sorting out.
Yeah, I thought Landale was like the most interesting person relative to expectation of anybody all day, honestly. In terms of Jerome, I mean, Kleiman said the thing from the jump about, you know, he turned down more money, you know, to come to Memphis, and people picked up on that. That's sort of, I'm not saying that's not true, it probably is true, but it's sort of an evidence-free assertion. There was no reporting that he turned down more money. Cleveland notably did not offer him more. That's one of the reasons he left Cleveland, as they decided to pay Sam Merrill. I do assume he turned down at a minimum the same money to come to Memphis, and he had other comparable offers at a minimum. But I don't think he turned down like a lot more money. If he turned down more money, I don't know if that's really true. But he came to a place where he's going to be in a somewhat similar role to who he was in Cleveland, it seems. It seemed like it was less about the opportunity of role than the system, than wanting that the way they want to play utilizes his skill set. Yep. I think it was more about that.
Okay, Landale, who I agree was terrific, and particularly talking about the different kind of screening in Europe. And there's obviously his relationship. He was texting Steven yesterday about where to live and where to eat and how to play with different players in Memphis. What struck you about Landale?
I mean, all of that and more, but just the idea, because for him, like, the opportunity thing is very real. And it's possible that it's short-lived when Edie comes back. If Edie comes back, he could be out of the rotation. He could go from starting to out of the rotation. But he's a guy who, you know, he's 4 years of NBA experience, but he's already almost 30. Like, he hasn't had a long NBA run. And when he has played, he hasn't been in the rotation a lot for teams. Sometimes he has, but a lot of times he's not. And this idea of someone who just really wants to play, and that can be a tough thing for guys who are sort of on the margins like that. Like, do you sit at the end of an NBA bench and you're in the NBA, or you go overseas and play a lot? And what matters to you, right? Because you can't do this for very long. It's not like, you know, it's not like being a golfer or whatever, and you can, you know, be out on the course every day. When you're 50 or whatever, even if you're not a pro, at some level, like, you know, you can't even play basketball anymore, even for fun, you know? And so do you waste your prime years sitting on a bench, or do you want to actually play? And so for him, talking about this is a rare opportunity for him to stay in the NBA and step into, at least initially, a big role, and a role that fits his skill set. And it sounded like he and the team are really on the same page. You almost got more detail out of Jock Landale about the Grizzlies' play style than you did from Isolo. Because Isolo didn't talk about, like, we're going to be screening heavy and all that stuff that we assume. Hanford didn't say any of that. But Landale said that very specifically. Like, you know, I love to screen, and I love to offensive rebound, and I love to play defense. Like, that is what we assume, like, Isolo wants from his bigs. And Landale sort of confirmed that, you know?
Yeah. All right, I got to go. One thing, Vince said 90, he's only at 90%. That was a little jarring.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had an indication that he maybe wasn't all the way back physically from some other people I talked to, seeing some of the individual practices. I am a little concerned. I'm a little concerned on his behalf, because I think it's harder. The opportunity is harder to come by for him now, because of all the other changes that have happened around him on the team, and because now he's got this new head coach who was not there when he was awesome. And if there's less of an opportunity and he is not 100%, like, it's so easy to see him get lost in the mix. And I believe in his talent and what he showed a couple of years ago, but that was at 100% with opportunity. And if it's not 100% and it's not the same opportunity, like, I don't know where it's going to head with him.
All right, Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Herrington and Drew Hill headed over to Nashville. So I've been telling you about Josh Hisaw and the instant cash offer and all that. And by the way, if you were selling your house, it's certainly a way to go. But there's this great Grayson, one of his recent clients, and he'd heard us talking about this. And he said, he had to sell his house fast because he had a sick family member and needed to leave and take care of them. And he thought this would be the way to go. And Josh comes out and he says, you know what? I think we could maybe even make more money selling it traditional way. Because Josh has a marketing system that reaches thousands and thousands of potential homeowners every day, helps him sell houses fast for the most money possible. So that's what they decided to do. And sure enough, sold the house. Grayson is thrilled with the way it evolved. That's the thing. With Josh Hisaw, it's a flexible approach. Yes, he has the instant cash offer. And that may make a lot of sense depending on your house, your situation, and what you need for the future. But he still does sell houses the traditional way. And so what you should do if you're thinking of selling your home is get in touch with Josh Hisaw and the team from Keller Williams Realty. 901-461-8147. 901-461-8147. More than 300 five-star Google reviews, so you don't have to take my word for it. On the web at joshhasthebuyers.com. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, when we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C., the author of three New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award, Excellence in Business Writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand joins me now. And given all that is happening in the world, Charles, all that is happening right here in Memphis, certainly in D.C. and beyond, I do think it's very important to begin with a Reese's update.
Can you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you. Yes.
You can hear me. This is really, there is so much going on, but the most important thing is that really our Reese's correspondent, Mark, who last week reported on Reese's Chips Ahoy that we didn't even know existed, last night, he and his wife were at the grocery store. They found the Reese's Oreo peanut butter cups. They bought them.
So these were actually peanut butter cups infused by Oreo. These were not the cookies infused.
Right. It's not the cookies. The peanut butter cups. Yeah. These are the ones that kind of look interesting and appealing. The Oreo cookies with the gray filling just don't look that appealing. He found them at an Albertsons in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay.
32 cups for $5.99.
Oh, little ones. They were the little ones?
You know, a bag, a Halloween bag. Okay. It's a Halloween bag.
I was going to say 32 Reese's peanut butter cups, full size. That's a lot of cups. And I know Mark works out,
I think they're probably the smaller size.
Okay, yeah.
And they were so excited that they ate them in the car.
That's exciting.
He sent me pictures of the Reese's
peanut butter cups. And what's the report? Thumbs up? Thumbs
up? To the gear shifter. He said they're really quite good. You open them and the top is white. That's a little weird. I'm looking at the picture right now. And you can see the Oreo inside. He cut it in half, gave us a cross section. He said they have a little crunch, which is the Oreo cookie. He said, I'm going to read you exactly what he said. I like them. They're very sweet. My wife says, stick with the original, but the crunch is good.
Why the original is so perfect. I don't see why. That's the problem
I
with
said
this
to him,
version.
It feels like there would be too much. You just look at it and think, white, brown, filling, peanut butter, cookies.
But he
it seems like there's too much going on. He said, yes.
But, by really the way, we also, I know he is the official, much as Lexi is the official Taylor Swift correspondent.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Right.
Mark can now be the official Reese's correspondent. But we do have other correspondents. We have multiple people during the week.
It's going to be a short career.
Multiple people during the week who contacted you about having found one version of this stuff or the other, right? On Twitter.
Or another. Right.
Yeah.
Right. On Twitter. The general view is that these are pretty good and the cookies just don't really cut it. But I guess Reese's couldn't get the Oreos without offering Reese's in the other direction. Anyway, I think that's probably all we need to say about this. When I get them,
let me ask you this. When I get them, I will buy them. Okay.
Huh?
I want to ask you this, and just all I need is a yes or no answer. Is the government going to shut down?
Yes. We're talking, you know, we're talking in the morning of Tuesday, September 30th.
Right.
By the way, we're taping this segment.
So if
you and John Martin and Jeffrey and you know, big into Poly Market. I had to look up the name of Poly Market last night. I couldn't remember what it was called. Poly Market puts the odds at 85%. I put the odds higher than that. There's There's no path to the government not shutting down.
It feels
down
like
right
we get to the brink all the time, right? This is what it just routine. It feels like we get to the brink all the time. We talk about the shutdown, and then it doesn't happen. And yet this one somehow feels more inevitable. Is that
well,
right?
I mean, there have been about, I think there have been 21 shutdowns since the 1980s. We didn't used to do this because the president would simply say, you can keep paying the bills until we get this sorted out. Then the government decided that it was illegal to pay the bills without legal authorization. And that's where the shutdowns came from. But really, I mean, I'm not prepared to talk about this in detail today. Okay. But the entire federal government budget process is broken. That's the fault of guess who? Democrats, and guess who? Republicans.
Oh.
They don't ever do
well, you're
their
both sides
work
in it. You're both sides in
absolutely
it now.
Absolutely. I'm not either oring it. I'm both sides in it. It's ridiculous how they manage the nation's money. And so
let me run this show just for a second. First of all, I'm going to get to why it's going to shut down and what it's about in a minute. But if it does shut down, what does that mean for us and for America and for Memphians and other folks out there?
I mean, in the first day or two, or things usually run normally. The most important services, Social Security, emergency services, run normally. Social Security payments are made, direct deposit checks. TSA at airports and air traffic controllers and emergency personnel, they all normally come to work. They're instructed to come to work, even though they're not technically getting paid. And then what happens is we get chunkered. So they are really getting paid. But if we go 2 weeks, they miss a paycheck, which is then made up. What happens over time, to be honest, is that people take side gigs or they simply get resentful about being forced to work while Congress dithers and sick calls increase. The last time there was a big shutdown, my wife happens to be in Miami flying home at some point this week. One of the TSA checkpoints in Miami International Airport completely shut down because they didn't have the staff to run them all. Well, that dramatically changes your airport experience, right? So, and then the last big shutdown.
Yeah.
So this is a fight in which the, a quote unquote, clean continuing resolution. They just want to get a month. They're only asking for a month or so of funding authorization to pass things out. And they're like, everybody should be in favor of a clean resolution. We're just going to continue funding just as it is. Now, the last time we shut things down was the longest shutdown in history, 2019 with President Donald Trump. And the roles were completely reversed. The Democrats want to extend some critical health insurance tax credits.
This time.
Last time, Donald Trump wanted funding for the border wall, construction of which had not started. He shut down the government because Democrats in Congress wouldn't give him border
wall.
Back
then, Democrats wanted a clean bill that would just keep the budget running, and Trump wanted a border. And it shut down for how
Trump
long?
Trump used the moment to demand funding for the border wall.
It didn't get
this
it.
Time. Yeah. This time, what's happening this year is that tax credits that reduce the cost of ACA health insurance, the government marketplace health insurance, they expire December 31st. Tomorrow, people will start getting notices that their health insurance costs for next year are going up 40 or 50%. If you pay $300 a month, you're about to pay $500 a month because the credits are going away. And Democrats want a commitment to extend those credits to keep health insurance affordable. The estimate is that 3 or 4 million people will lose health insurance if we don't do that. Republicans say there's plenty of time to talk about that. Let's just keep the government open. Right, there's plenty of time to talk about it, but this is the moment when Democrats have leverage. Republicans control the whole government. So that's what the fight is over.
I thought it was about, to be clear, I thought it was about free medical care for illegal immigrants. I thought that.
Right. Just for everybody listening, whether you're a Trump supporter or not, federal law explicitly forbids providing medical care using federal money to people who are in the country illegally. Federal law has a provision that explicitly forbids using federal funding to provide medical care to illegal immigrants. So that's not a problem. That is pure false flag. You can argue about everything else, whether it's a good idea to do. You know what would be a good idea? Pass rational budget resolutions without waiting until checking out is about. It's like you and your wife, or me and my wife, arguing about whether to pay the mortgage when there's only $6 in the checking account anyway, right? This is a stupid way of running the government. Both sides are guilty, and
do you think it now depends on how this goes politically? Like, in other words, if Democrats,
is it the Trump shutdown or the Schumer shutdown?
Yeah,
is it the health insurance?
Right.
Is it protecting health insurance or Democrats holding up the federal government
for
in
something
order to
political?
Get some
right.
Of,
exactly. Whoever you know, wins the narrative will ultimately prevail, and the other folks will collapse.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that's how the politics will look. The polling is very clear. 80% of Republicans want the health insurance subsidies extended. They use them. And 90% of Democrats want the health insurance subsidies extended. But how you tell the story, of course, yes, really, really matters. Last night, yesterday afternoon, Democrats went to the White House and met with President Trump. They both called it a difficult but constructive conversation. Then last night, President Trump posted a video, a made-up AI-generated video, literally mocking Senator Schumer, who's the leader in the Senate, and Hakeem Jeffries is pictured wearing a sombrero, which doesn't really make any sense at all, except to mock him as a guy just standing by. And, you know, the President of the United States posting ostensibly satirical videos about his governing partners. Yeah, that's not great dialogue. So it's going to shut down. It'll be interesting to see if a week from now, when Fish on Friday on Tuesday rejoins the show, we're still in shutdown. I predict that we have come to some resolution before our next segment.
All right. In the meantime, are they going to be able to pay for all the generals to get to Washington, D.C.? I mean, that's right. That's what has to happen, right? All the generals and their staff. Who's being summoned to D.C.? Who's joining you there in D.C. is where, I guess, the way I should phrase it.
My friend, they're here. Last week, Secretary of Defense, Hegseth, Secretary of War, Hegseth, summoned the 800 most senior officers in the U.S. military, all one-star generals and admirals, were required to leave their posts around the world in Asia, in the Middle East, in Europe, and come to Washington to sit in an auditorium this very morning. It happened. Military meetings, military folks get going early, and the meeting was underway at like 7:15, 7:30. Secretary Hegseth addressed the generals, and all of them were required to bring their senior staff, 800 senior officers, probably each with, you know, three or four people, 3,000 people. flew to Washington for a two-hour meeting in a room in Quantico Marine Base. That alone cost millions and millions of dollars, even if those trips only cost $1,000 or $2,000 for each person. That's, you know, $5-6 million. It's not clear why Secretary Hegseth wanted everybody in the room. It's nice to have in-person meetings, but this means that every command, every U.S. military command in the world is now staffed by junior officers, not even a one star below that. So it's kind of a weird thing to do. And also you're putting the entire command staff. President Trump could not resist the chance. I would not have been able to resist the chance to go meet every one of his generals. So he went to the meeting and addressed them as well. There was no big news out of this. There was worry that he was going to announce that we're going to war with Venezuela, or that 20% of them are about to be fired and won't have a job when they walk out the door. None of that happened.
So it was considered this big ominous thing, but it turned out to be much ado about nothing.
It's mostly a pep rally, as much as you can have.
Well, listen, I'm the world of sports. People, we approve of pep rally. Let me ask you.
He was greeted. He was greeted. Both Hegseth and Trump. Was quiet in the room. So that was considered of some significance.
Let me get to anything else. Let's interrupt this. How would I
segment
describe?
Segment segment,
yeah, no,
segment.
I mean, something a little, let's get to something a little off of the beaten path. Subtitles, TV subtitles.
You always pick the best thing that I say for last.
I want to make sure we get to it because you talk so much.
We're going to get to it.
Tell me about the subtitles.
The use of TV closed captioning is absolutely surging across the country. Okay. Do you ever turn on
100%
the captions 100%. On your program? You do.
No.
And you know how to do it.
That is a great question, Charles. You have
I use them, and if they're not
figured out how to do it because they used to sort of irritate me. I'm like, I can listen. I don't need to be reading this. They were a little bit of a distraction. But then I realized, this is terrible to say, Charles. I'm going in to have my knee looked at tomorrow because it clicks. And I listen to this. I watch the subtitles because I can't figure out what the hell people are saying some of the times. And is that because of my advancing age, or is, well, I don't know why? But I have
all kinds of news for you. But let me tell you the most important discovery. If you like subtitles, if you like the closed captions, we have Verizon at home for the regular TV, non-streaming. We don't run Netflix on our TVs. And it has voice command. And if you press the voice command and say, turn on closed captions, turn off closed captions, it does it. If you try and do it through the settings menu, you literally miss half the show. It takes 10 minutes. But it will do it on voice command. So that's, and on most of the streaming services, there's a little icon right down at the bottom of the screen. So yes, more than 50% of Americans use captions or subtitles half the time, always or often. But what's really interesting is 40% of people under 44 use them always or often.
Really?
More people under 44 than over 44.
Let's ask Jeffrey. Jeffrey, do you use, if you're watching something, do you use subtitles?
Usually if I'm watching a scripted show, yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. So there you go.
And my daughter, who's much younger than Jeffrey, same thing, always on. Here, there's two reasons. One reason goes, or there's really three reasons. One reason goes right to what you said. Everybody agrees that the audio on movies and TV shows is much less crisp and much less hearable than it used to be just 20 years ago, 15 years ago, because of how these shows are made. They're made a little more artfully, and the actual, whatever the hearing word for legibility is, the hearability of each individual word, just isn't that important to directors. So if you turn them on, I thought you were going to say something slightly different. We noticed that we missed things. Oh, that's what they said. Okay, great. But for the younger folks, 44 and under, they're doing more than one thing at once. They're scrolling TikTok while listening to, while watching the show. or it's noisy in the background because we're watching TV in the kitchen, in the family room. We've watched other stuff going on a walk, in places we never watched TV before. And so the audio environment is different, and so it's hard to hear. So I just think it's interesting that the young people do it. Brief history, the first closed captions came in 1980. For about a decade, you needed a decoder box. The signal was sent out, but you needed a box to listen to them if you had limited hearing. In 1993, Congress passed legislation. This is why you can do this, because there's a law requiring all TVs 13 inches or larger. We used to have 13-inch TVs.
Now we have 13-inch telephones.
Exactly.
By the way, all right. Well, let's. Anything else you want to say about?
Anyway, so that's yes. It's just interesting. The 44 and younger, 40% always on.
Kind of nice. Okay, you want
45 and older, 28%.
Wanted to give me a quick word about the seasonal hiring or something called bed rotting. I don't know what that is. Anything you want to talk about next week?
Hold on to bed rotting. Bed rotting is such
a great.
Sounds
awful. Yeah.
Such a great. You do it all the time.
Okay.
You're rotting right in bed. Seasonal hiring, normally 540,000 people hired between like November 1st and January 1st or November 1st and January 15th to help retailers, UPS, FedEx handle the Christmas surge. This year, companies aren't even announcing they're hiring. Last year, Target had said we're going to hire 100,000. This year, all they've announced about seasonal hiring is we're going to give our existing employees more hours. So if you count on that to make the shopping experience better, shop early. If you count on that to help make a little extra money and get you through the holiday season, it's going to be harder to get those seasonal jobs.
I bet they'll be hiring people at the hub to help the packages move for here at FedEx. I bet they'll be having seasonal. Yeah, go ahead.
Predicting fewer than 500,000 this year, down from 543 last year. FedEx typically hires about 70,000. UPS 125,000. Again, they have not announced.
Amazing you know that off the top of your head. We got to get out of here, though. We got to get out of here, Charles. We appreciate it.
Retail jobs are falling already.
Go eat a Reese's. Thanks very much. See you later on Twitter at C Fishman.
Go to your national park today.
Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson will join their program today, as well as we have the return of Jason Fitz today on their program. Tim Murray will be with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We gotta get out of here. We gotta get out of here. We're not gonna shut down. We'll be back tomorrow, but for now, work is done.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.